the faces of the brethren on this occasion, where the Lord has permitted so many of similar hearts, minds, and hopes, and of like precious faith to assemble together in praise and worship and thanksgiving and study of the deep things of God's Word. I'm sure we have already received many blessings with the promise of more to come, so we can indeed say that it's another occasion in which we have been invited into the banqueting house with the banner over us to be loved. What time is it now? Is the subject that we intend to use for this period. What time is it now? All the Lord's people have been especially time conscious ever since we entered into the period designated as the time of the end. But we've been in the time of the end period for some many years now, from 1799 onward. A whole century has passed by, and we're running into the latter part of another century. But they're still here, they're still hoping, and they still have questions. Hence the question of the hour is, where are we now on the stream of time? And we would like to endeavor to bring us up to date as closely as we can to the present situation. Why have there been questions? Well, because after 1914, we had arrived at a dead end there, quotation marks. For many, it was really and literally a dead end. Everything had come to an end. But for many others, though it had been a dead end seemingly, it was the beginning of new prospects, new investigations, and new hopes. And so in their perhaps anxiety to stimulate their inspiration and aspiration towards a culmination, new dates were set. The most prominent of which was 1925. But prior to that, 1918 was suggested or thought about. It wasn't suggested by the pastor, except that there was a possibility that things might begin to develop more rapidly still, but his words were, there is no time limit from our present point of view. So even though 1918 looked as though things could happen still, the year of 1918 passed on, and it was only the beginning of new eventful clouds of trouble rather than the culmination of the hopes of the saints of God. And so 1925 came into the foreview as another date to look forward to. And it stimulated many. Indeed, they put their stocks in that. And by that I mean that it was said that the ancient worthies would return, and many had the faith that they even set the time and place where they were going to arrive at, and intended to be in this distant place where the properties had been established to welcome them. 1925 came, and 1925 went. The ancient worthies did not arrive, and the kingdom was not manifest. And so they had to reorient their viewpoints, time-wise. Well, they didn't know what to do, because they had nothing, no more material now with which to make up any more authentic time calculation. And so it was sort of a desert period that they began to walk into. They just didn't know where the next time would be coming up at. Well, some others began to put in some new ideas. They thought they'd fill in the vacuum. So we had a series of dates suggested by a periodical, I think is familiar to many of us, the Zion's Messenger. They've gone out of business. That's a sign of the times. But they had many dates, after the other. They didn't give up right away. But nothing happened there. But then we had another prominent date, 54. That looked very serious indeed. And there was another crusade to stake stocks on that date. When I say stake stocks, I mean they bought properties and invested their future on the supposition that that would be so. And prior to that time, they expected certain things to happen that would necessitate the possession of places to revert to in the event that the trouble came in its full climax before that date. 1954 came. 1954 went. Some of them are not here, but we are. So we find that our clocks evidently were set to the wrong time. Those who had 1954 or 1956, which was the alternate, in view. Now, since that date, I haven't heard any more specific dates. There may have been some, but from the standpoint of those of us here, I haven't been conscious of any dates that have been circulating amongst the Lord's people. So the question is still very pressing or very pertinent. What time is it? Now, well, we have had prospects that we have set before us, beloved, and perhaps they have served a purpose. We have decided to revert to the pastor's expectations along this line or that line or the other line. And we reminded ourselves that certain things were going to happen in the area of church development with respect to their powers and abilities and perhaps fulfillment of prophecies in respect to being activated and perhaps even bringing serious persecutions on the Lord's people. Well, those things Brother Russell had talked about, but nothing had happened, so we decided to bring that up before our minds and inspire us to look forward to something. And there were other viewpoints that we used to inspire ourselves with. Armageddon might come at any time, because we have been in a time of trouble ever since 1914. And there are always possibilities that it would erupt into a final climax. And then, of course, there was Jacob's trouble. There we had a serious situation there, back there, with the Jews. And that looked very much like a very strong sign of culmination coming to pass. Indeed, the great figure of that particular era said that he was going to establish a new reign for 1,000 years. And he wasn't talking about Christ either. I'm sure you know who I'm referring to. He's the one that gave the Jews so much trouble. He had the world staged. Let no question, let no doubts be raised about that. And he had the world in quite a good deal of fear and uproar and terror. But he passed away. And he's just about forgotten. And time has marched on. The Jews are still here, doing better than ever. So that wasn't the time for the final fulfillment of our hope. Well, then now, we say again, what time is it now? Well, we believe, beloved, that it is later than you think. And we wish to endeavor to use that as a means of stimulating us in our endeavors and in this way. John told us, in his conviction that the time was drawing near, 1 John 2:18, he says, little children, it is the last hour. So you see, that would be one way of summarizing the culmination of the time of the end. It is the last hour. Well, from his point of view, it was right, because he gave a reason for it. He says, ye have heard that Antichrist shall come. And he says, even now, there are many Antichrists. And so that was his basis for drawing attention to the fact that it was the last hour. I would like to emphasize that in your mind, because I'm going to quote it directly. First John 2:18. Little children, it is the last time. In the other translation, it is the last hour. And as ye have heard, that Antichrist, this is capitalized, shall come. Even now, there are many Antichrists, small letters, whereby we know that it is the last time. Now, you see, he had the right key. He had the right chronometer, shall we say, to set his watch by. Antichrist was the chronometer. He says, many there are already many Antichrists, so that means you've got to be on the alert. But the Antichrist, he says, is about to come on the scene. So now that is true. And Paul verifies that, even though he changes the time setting. So we turn to 2 Thessalonians, and we find what Paul has to say about this subject of Antichrist. Paul reminds us that the time feature, of course, would be a little delayed for the simple reason that Antichrist hadn't come to its full birth, fruition, and development. So he says this, now we beseech you, brethren, by the coming of the Lord Jesus Christ. Oh, there's your final chronometer. See. The others are secondary. This is the major chronometer, the second coming or presence of Christ. If you haven't got that, you can't set your watch at all. You'll be off the track altogether. So he says, we beseech you, dear brethren, by the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ, that and by our gathering together unto him. Oh, yes. That's the feature that this particular overwhelming doctrine, or doctrine of overwhelming importance, is going to bring to our minds. Our gathering together. If we're not gathering together, it means that we haven't set our clocks right. And so we beseech you, by our gathering together unto him, that ye be not shaken in mind or be troubled, neither by spirit nor word or letter from us, as though the day of Christ is at hand. Because, he says, that day shall not come except there come a falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition. So you see, John was warning the church that it was the last hour, because for them, and from the standpoint of what was about to transpire, was. Because he had had the revelation, he was the one to whom the vision of revelation was given, so he had seen the kingdom. He was in the Spirit on the Lord's day, beloved. He was way down here. Talk about taking a flight into space, he did it. He took a flight into space and he ended up way up there on the throne where God dwells, evidently in the Pleiades, and that's where he saw the vision of the city, the New Jerusalem, the holy city, coming down as a bride adorned for her husband out of heaven into earth. He must have really traveled in the Spirit. You can travel in the Spirit. But that's why it was the last hour, because he was as though he was in the Spirit of the kingdom. He was down here. And so if you take that projective point of view, it was the last hour, because he had already seen these things. But Paul, of course, had to get us back to earth, because he recognized the Lord had shown him that there was a long stretch of time involved. And so he reminds us to not to overlook the interim. So he said, that day shall not come except there come a falling away first, and that man is in reveal. Who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God, or that is worshipped, and that he, as God, sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. That's quite an exaltation. So he says, for the mystery of iniquity doth already work. Only he who now letteth will let until he be taken out the way. And then, now he's given you, he's to come up about 1,000 years now. He said, and then shall that wicked one be revealed, whom the Lord, now the Lord has come on the scene. See, now we begin to set our watch. For whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming. Even him whose coming is after the working of Satan, with all power and signs and lying wonders, and with all deceitfulness of unrighteousness in them that perish. That's a tremendous movement, with all energy and power to deceive and to oppose the mind of God. Now he says, when you see that system come up into full blossom, and then when you see the Lord has come back on the scene to take care of it, then you know that the time is beginning to come to a culmination. Just beginning. whom the Lord shall destroy with the brightness of his presence and consume with the breath of his lips. What's the breath of his lips? The message that he causes to go forth from his mouth through the instrumentality that he has been using in this harvest period. Do we say that the plagues have been poured out? Yes, on the basis of the fact that they represent the composite message of present truth, which has proceeded from the mouth of the Lord. That's the breath of his lips. It's consuming. It's destroying. It's shining. It's like a fire that consumes all that goes before it, and yet it is as a holy spiritual force that draws those who are to be drawn by its influence. But it's all the breath of his lips. But for Antichrist, it is to consume them. But for the Lord's people, it is a message of hope, encouragement, and says, come out of her, my people. So now we begin to see where we're arriving, time-wise. Jesus refers to this great conflict of the ages when he says that when they accused him, he says, thou art Beelzebub, because of the healing that he had done, because he had done these good works on the Sabbath day. And Jesus says, if I am Beelzebub, by whom do your children do their healing and good works, which they think are good works? But he says, if Satan be divided against himself, then surely, if Satan begins to cast out and do good works by casting out devils and healing the sick, then he says, is his house divided against itself? And if Satan is fighting against himself, then surely his kingdom will fall. That's the period that we have been developing in. Revelation says it is the hour of trial or temptation which shall come upon the whole world, which the Philadelphia church, he said, would be spared because they had kept the word of his patience. How about that, beloved? They had kept the word of his patience. It's hard to be patient when the Lord doesn't tell you where you're going. You know, you always get a little anxious, and sometimes we can become a little premature, and we want to hurry up matters, or at least set up goals toward which we want to strive that may not be of the Lord's arrangement. And so that's why he said to Philadelphia, because you waited patiently, even though all the things that you expected didn't come, and you didn't even see me, because it wasn't time for me to come, you kept the word of my patience, therefore I will keep thee from this hour of trial, which is to come from the whole world. But now, you see, to Philadelphia, to Laodicea, it was not going to be a matter of patience anymore, because he said, behold, I come quickly. They wouldn't have long to wait, but they would have to go through this hour of trial. But they would have a special dispensation of message of truth to sustain them, those who were of the true church, even though they would be living and be developed during the Laodicean period. So it is the hour of trial that has come upon the whole world. We are in it. And the church that has known of the experiences through which they have been passing in the past 80 years knows it too. Timothy says it is the time, it is the last days of perilous times. And you know the rest of the story. Are the times perilous? I bless your heart, you don't even know whether it's safe to go out at night or not anymore. Perilous time. These are the last days. And then Daniel, last of all, tells us about the time at the end. And he brings it out to us very forcefully, because Daniel has all the authoritative information to bring to us on this matter of time features. He tells us about the 1260 days, about the 1290 days, and last of all, the most momentous time feature that we recognize, the 1335 days. Now here's how he expresses himself on this matter. 12th chapter of Daniel, the 8th verse, we read, and I heard, but I understood not. That's the state of mind that the Lord's people have to be in sometimes. He was anxious about these things because he recognized that they were great events of tremendous significance, but he couldn't understand them. He heard, but he understood not. So then he said, oh, my Lord, what shall be the end of these things? And he said, go thy way. The Lord said unto him, go thy way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end. Many shall be purified and made white and tried, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand. And from the time that the daily sacrifice shall be taken away, and the abomination that maketh desolate set up, they all talk about Antichrist, beloved. Do you see the connection? The abomination of desolation be set up. That's your time clock, you remember. Secondary one. The main one is the coming of the Lord. He says, shall be, there shall be 200, there shall be 1,290 days. That's 1,290 days. That's one time stretch that he gives you. But blessed is he that waiteth patient, and cometh to the 1,305 days. That's the final stretch of time for the saints to look forward to. Blessed is he that waiteth and cometh to the 1,335 days. But go thou thy way till the end, for thou shalt rest and stand in thy lot at the end of the day. This is not for you. This is for the saints. Blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For many people have desired to look into these things, even the angels, and have not seen them, beloved. Now do you see where you stand? What the Lord has invited you into in connection with this banqueting house? To show you the secret features of his plan, which is called the divine plan of the ages. That's the end of the 1,335 days, not before. So now from we see what the time of the end means to us. And my, miraculous unfoldings of divine truth and knowledge and wisdom were unfolded thereafter from 1874 and 8 on. Why? Because that synchronized with the arrival of the second presence of Christ. That's your chronometer. That's when you begin to set your watches. Don't lose your time from that point on. But we've long gone since then. We're still here. The old timers are still here, and the young timers are still striving. The kingdom hasn't come down fully to earth. And so we're still puzzled. We had thought, as the strangers on the road to Emmaus said, that these things were going to be all fulfilled back in 1914. As a matter of fact, they thought it would be fulfilled several times before then. That's where we come into our present status from the standpoint of Elijah and Elisha. I was surprised that my mind was turned on the relationship that the brethren bear to one another. Very beautiful. We have the young, we have the old, and we have the middle aged. How should they get along together? The brother quoted the beautiful scriptural admonition. The younger brethren, subject yourselves to the older. But he said, as he so aptly said, don't stop there. He says he's not just talking about classes. Let all of you be subject one to another. Not easy to do. That's the idea. Because we are to be gathering together. Paul beseeches us. By the presence of the Lord. Not going apart. So now Elijah picture brings this to our attention in a very practical, up-to-date manner. For we read, and I just happened to bring this in to give you, I haven't even started my subject yet. And it came to pass when the Lord would take up Elijah. Oh, beloved, think about that. I want to get your minds back into that trend of relationship that was going on. Elijah was a great prophet. When Jesus went up and took the disciples with them up onto the Mount of Transfiguration, who did they see? Anyone? Moses and Elijah on either side of him. One representing the old dispensation. The other representing the new dispensation. There were no greater prophets than they outside of John the Baptist, who came into evidently a similar classification. But those were the two that Jesus were on either side of Jesus. So you cannot overestimate Elijah. And it came to pass when the Lord was about to take Elijah into heaven by a whirlwind that Elijah went with Elisha from Gilgal. And Elijah said unto Elisha, tarry here, I pray thee, for the Lord has sent me to Bethel. And Elisha said unto him, as the Lord liveth and as my soul liveth, I will not leave thee. How about that, beloved? Remember, Ruth said that to Naomi. Naomi said, stay back here. You have no prospects where I'm going. You don't even belong to my people. Hardship is going to face you there. And Ruth said, oh, no. Where thou goest, I will go. Where thou livest, I will live. Where thou diest, I will die. And so she went. So Elisha evidently had that spirit. So what's Elijah? He says, I will not leave thee. And so what was the result? They went on and talked and walked together. How about that, beloved? That's the picture for today. That's the only thing I want to impress upon your minds and hearts. And they traveled to four different places. And when they got to the next place, the sons of the prophets came out that were at Bethel to greet them. And they said unto Elisha, knowest thou that the Lord will take away thy master from thy head today? I'm reading from 2 Kings, 2nd chapter, in case you want to follow the context. The sons of the prophets said this, knowest thou to Elisha that the Lord shall take away thy master today? Can you imagine what a serious vein of thinking that stirred up in Elisha's mind? The greatest light that Israel had ever had, they had seen in centuries. He had turned the tide of the nation and changed the destiny of the world single-handedly. And he was about to be taken away. Elisha said, I know it, but hold your peace. Let's not talk about that just now. How about that prayer? Do you see any picture there? Knowest thou that thy master shall be taken away from thee soon? And so Elijah said unto him, Elijah, when they kept traveling now, Elijah, when they got on to the next place, said, tarry here, I pray thee. The Lord will send me to Jericho. He said, oh, no. See, there was a little discouragement there. They had come to these various places and nothing had happened. And they didn't know exactly what the next move was going to be. And perhaps Elijah might have been a little puzzled. But evidently he wasn't discouraged. But Elijah tested him. Elijah, he said, tarry here. You stay here. No sense in you going through all this projected and extended period of disappointment and perplexity and wonderment. Drop off. Rest. Get yourself some refreshment here. I'll go alone. Elijah said, oh, no. I will not leave thee. How about that, beloved? Sticking together. What happened as a result? Well, finally, when they got to Jericho, the sons of the prophet came to Elisha and said to him, knowest thou that the Lord will take away thy master from thy head today? And he answered, yes, I know it, but hold your peace. And Elijah said unto him, tarry here, I pray thee, for the Lord has sent me to Jordan. And he says, I will not leave thee. And then was the finality of this picture. Jordan, oh yes, we all know about Jordan. They have songs about Jordan. But what happened when they got to Jordan? Something happened. They were still walking and talking together, and Elisha must have been so stirred up that he was in awe of what was about to happen. He just didn't know. That's why he said, hold thy peace. He wanted to absorb it gradually. And suddenly, a whirlwind, or rather a fiery chariot, came in and separated them. Good thing Elisha had a strong heart, or he might have fainted. Seeing a fiery chariot come in between them, separated them. And then before his very eyes, here comes the whirlwind and takes Elijah up into heaven. Elijah says, my father, the chariots of Israel and the horsemen thereof. Symbol of God's dealing with them and of their strength in battle. The chariots of Israel and the horsemen. Yes, organization was the strength of Israel under God's direction. Nothing matter with organization, beloved. Hear what I say. God used it according to his discretion and wisdom. It was the strength of Israel. My father, the chariots of Israel and the horsemen thereof. The doctrines and teachings the Lord gave to his people came through the channel, it is true, which was under the administration of Brother Russell. Now, of course, it caught fire. And that's another story. And that's what caused the separation. I haven't time to go into that. We'll have to talk about it some other time. But it caught fire. And that's what caused the separation. Then the whirlwind came and took Elijah up. Elijah dropped his mantle as he went. Elisha picked it up. He was in deep grief, but there was no time for grieving at the time. He had to go for action because the prophets were there waiting for them. They wanted to know what was going to happen, and they wanted to see if Elisha would come back. Now Elisha asked a question, or Elijah encouraged him to ask. He said, "What wilt thou have of me before I leave thee?" Elijah knew that his time was coming, drawing nigh. "What will I ask?" I mean, he says, "Give me a double portion of thy spirit." He said, "If thou see me when I am taken from thee, it shall be even so unto thee." Draw your own lessons and conclusions, brother. Elijah and Elisha walked and talked together. And Elisha was given a promise of his request being granted on condition. "If thou see me when I am taken." Do you realize what's happening to Elijah, beloved? He's being taken. How many of the brethren are here that you used to know that were past 60? How much longer do you think they'll be here? And so, "If thou see me when I am taken, it shall be so unto thee." Do you still recognize the pastor? He was the symbol of that class during those periods that the Lord's message was being given before. Have you changed your mind about where the truth is coming from and who has more authority to tell us what the truth is? Do you still recognize Elijah? Well, he did have his request granted, because when Elijah dropped his mantle, Elisha picked it up. And he wrapped it up and approached Jordan, no doubt in full faith, notwithstanding some trepidation. And as he smote the waters, says my father, he says, "May the God of Israel manifest himself to us." And the waters of Jordan parted, and Elisha went across dry shod, and he met the sons of the prophet on the other side, and they bowed down to him and said, "We be strong men, and we be all thy servants." Because they recognized that he was instead of Elijah. He evidently had the same spirit. The Lord had granted him the power of identification. Now, as we say, the lesson there is that Elijah and Elisha walked and talked together. That's what the truth should do for us. Even when we get discouraged, even when we're puzzled and perplexed, we've got to walk and talk together about it. Because that's what it was with the disciples on the road to Emmaus. And then it was that Jesus came in the midst and joined the conversation. And he simply refreshed their minds about things that they already knew, but they didn't know how to put it together. When Jesus put it together, he says, "Didn't you know that it was said that these things should be so, that the Son of Man should come and suffer and die and then be glorified?" Then their hearts burned within them. And then their eyes were opened to recognize that the Lord was still leading them together. Now, the time definition that we want to use is found in the penny parable picture. We're going to suggest this, that may serve your pure hearts and minds to study, but we think that it'll give us a guide as to where we are in terms of the extremity of time. Remember, we said it is later than you think. Well, you know, of course, in the penny parable, the 11th hour is the keynote. I'm going to tell you in advance, I think we are well past the 11th hour. I won't tell you what time it is yet. A little early. But let's turn to the 20th chapter of Matthew. "For the kingdom of heaven is like unto a man that is in household, which went out early in the morning." I want you to put that in your memory. Early in the morning to hire laborers into his vineyard. "And when he had agreed with the laborers for a penny a day, he sent them into his vineyard. And he went about the third hour and saw others standing idle in the marketplace." Had nothing to do. "And he said to them, 'Go ye also into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right, I will give you.' And they went their way. And again he went out about the sixth, ninth hour and did likewise, and about the 11th hour he went out and found others standing idle and said unto them, why stand ye here all the day? They said unto him, because no man has hired us. He said unto them, go ye also into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right, that shall ye receive. So when even was come, the Lord of the vineyard saith unto the steward, steward, that familiar word? The Lord of the laborers said unto the steward, call the laborers and give them their hire, beginning from the last unto the first. And when they came, they were hired about the 11th hour, they received every man a penny. And when the first came, they supposed that they should have received more, and they likewise received every man a penny. And when they had received it, they murmured against the good man of the house, saying, these last have wrought but 1 hour, and thou hast made them equal unto us, which have borne the burden and the heat of the day. But he answered one of them and said, friend, I do thee no wrong. Didst thou not agree with me for a penny? That must have been an old timer. He didn't agree with all of them for a penny. How about that for love? Nothing against the old timers, but this is the way the picture runs. He answered unto one of them, friend, I did thee no wrong. Did thou not agree with me for a penny? Take that thine is, and go thy way. I will give unto the last, even as unto thee. So the last shall be first, and the first last. For many are called, and few chosen. Now, at least you've got the context. Maybe we'll have to develop the subject on another occasion, but we've stirred up your mind. I will just briefly give you a summary. We have sufficient information here to indicate that this parable applies on this side of the veil, because there's no murmuring on the other side. This is the pastor's conclusion, too. So therefore, we know that we have to find an application down here. The pastor asserted that these events would take place on this side, but he wasn't sure about the time application. We submit that the going out early in the morning represents the gospel call and invitation to the high calling that began from 1874 and S78 on, culminating in 1881. Because the early in the morning is an expression that we have elsewhere referred to, that God shall help her, and that early in the morning. So that's where we begin the setting of this parable. So, having established the location and the fulfillment down here, what are we going to do about our time? Well, we notice one more point, that the murmuring is against the good man of the house, or the steward, and not against the Lord of the vineyard. Although it is indirectly. Because if it wasn't that way, you see, you would say, well, you couldn't accuse any of us of being murmured. You'd be very angry with me. Because we as the Lord people don't think about murmuring against the Lord, certainly not intentionally. But the implication here is, beloved, that the murmuring is against the good man of the house. And we believe that the good man of the house, or the steward, was that wise and faithful steward over whom the Lord had made, put in him in charge of all his goods. And we believe that he dispensed the penny. The Lord called the steward, or the good man of the house, and said, give to the laborers their hire. Look at that in the context. What was the penny? You're interested to know about that, I believe. Those also define the penny as the kingdom honors, the privilege of understanding the truth, and the joys of serving. Not the Holy Spirit, no. Because everybody didn't get the penny. Only those who were called in the early morning were promised the penny. Those who came into the truth way back in those early years They were given a definite understanding and appreciation of what the high calling was and of their place in it. And an agreement was made that they could get their reward if they were faithful. But in 1881, the general call ceased. And so from then on, Brother Russell explains to you, and I have the references here, I'll have to continue this at another time, in your sixth volume, page 156. He tells us that the general call has ceased because the full number had been gathered in. Now, he says, don't let that discourage you. He says, you just keep on consecrating because the Lord has other rewards for those who may consecrate and for whom there may be no room, who might be associated with the ancient worthies. That's your sixth volume. But he says, I'm not telling you that the door is closed because that is not the case. He says, the Lord no doubt has other provisions for those to come in because of some who may fall out. So now when the call goes forth after 1881, which is the third hour in the parable, he says to them, he says, why are you standing idle? In other words, in view of the fact that the high calling had ceased, those who understood the truth knew that, and these are the ones to whom it applies, they figured, well, there's nothing for us to strive for. We can't be sure of anything. So he says, why stand ye here idle? In other words, they weren't too confident about getting into this arrangement. And they said, nobody has hired us. If the call is over, if the general high calling is ceased, what can we strive for? He says, you come into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right, I will give you. Now, that's your picture from there on. No promise of a penny. Whatsoever is right. And so that's the standard that applies at the 11th hour. Now, we can't go into the details. Our time is running out, but we want to bring it to a close. So the key to where we are on the stream of time from the standpoint of this parable is that we have long ago entered the state that corresponds to the murmuring of those who were called early and were discouraged about the fact that those who had worked 1 hour, that's already passed, had gotten the same price as they had. I'll tell you where the penny was distributed, but I can't talk to you about that now. And have indeed witnessed the final conclusion of this parable, we have that understand this picture, that many are called, but few are chosen. And so what time is it now? We dare say, beloved, that it is 12:30. Or something past. And so, as Brother Russell has suggested, on terms of the Elijah and Elisha picture type, Elijah was sent to four places, Gilgal, Bethel, Jericho, and Jordan. Jordan was arrived at in 1914. After that, no destination. They were only walking and talking together until the Lord intervened in the situation with the fiery chariot and the whirlwind that took him up. And so may it please the Lord to keep us walking and talking together. May the Lord add to us.
Well, the Lord bless you, Brother Jacobs. Indeed, this is a subject that all the friends are very concerned about. But although we don't have a definite date in front of us, we do have definite prophecies that have been fulfilled during the harvest hour, are being fulfilled during the harvest hour, and are going to continue to be fulfilled in order to make us realize where we are in accordance with the harvest period and the glorification of the church.
By the services of our dear brethren who have served us from the platform, and I have enjoyed it immensely, and I'm sure that you have too, and I'm sure that by this time